Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson, and today, friends, we're talking about women and children first. Ladies and gentlemen, the character of the nation has come apart at the seams, and there are certain events that waken us up to the reality of what we've become. And I'm going to go back a month or so on this edition of the program. And by the way, we're also going back 100 years to talk about the Titanic. But we're also going to be talking about the Costa Concordia that went down off the coast of the Mediterranean Sea about a month ago. And this woke us up to the realities of what modern man has become in the Western world with the abandonment of the Christian faith. Guess what happens? With egalitarianism and existentialism, the self-orientation that most people take to the world around them. Guess what happens? That's right. They wind up getting a foot in the face of somebody else, and there is no such thing as women and children first in the modern sense, especially during times of great tragedy and emergency. We begin to learn what we have become. And today, friends, we're going to talk about the Titanic 100 International Centennial event taking place in Branson, Missouri on April 13th and 14th. And you need to mark this down in your calendar. This is a very important event, a very important time in American history. In fact, in all of worldwide history, the Titanic was a remarkable event and something that remains the memory of those who look back. And we can learn so much from this. We can learn about who we are, what we've become, and what we need to be. Well, to talk about this with me is the sponsor of the event, Doug Phillips from Vision Forum. Doug, welcome back to our Generations broadcast, my friend.
Kevin, it's great to be back with you today. Thank you for highlighting this incredibly important moment in history. You know, Kevin, we founded the Christian Boys and Men Titanic Society more than 15 years ago, and every year on the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic, Christian men have met to commemorate the principle of women and children first. And we've been waiting for this moment. We've been waiting for the 100th year anniversary. And it's exciting to me that men like yourself want to get that message out to people because of the primacy of the doctrine of male protection of women.
And in God's providence, Doug, I mean, this is incredible that on the 100th anniversary of the Titanic, the Costa Concordia went down, and there have been so many articles on this. And I've wanted to do a program on this since that happened about a month ago. And now's the time to do it because we're about ready to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Titanic. And, Doug, I mean, here are so many stories coming from all of the secular press sources concerning the abandonment of the women and children first a premise. And here, UK Daily Mail, this is January 17th. Whatever happened to women and children first? The tragedy of the wrecked cruiser liner, the Costa Concordia, with its dreadful loss of life and hideous memories for the terror-stricken crew and passengers, has appalled all of us. It would now seem as though the accident was unavoidable, and this makes it all the more horrifying. One of the features of the disaster that has provoked a great deal of comment is the stream of reports from angry survivors of how, in the chaos, men refused to put women and children first and instead pushed themselves forward to escape, and how the Italian crew ignored passengers and reportedly shouldered their way past mothers and pregnant women to get into the lifeboat. And then he goes on and on about the Titanic for the next two pages of this article that came out about a month ago. And you might have seen the Mark Stein article as well. He refers to the Titanic again. The male passengers there gave their lives for the women and would never have considered doing otherwise on the Costa Concordia. In the words of a female passenger, quote, "There were big men, crew members, pushing their way past us to get into the lifeboat." After similar scenes on the MV Estonia a few years ago, Roger Cohen of the International Maritime Organization told Time magazine, quote, "There is no law that says women and children first. That is something from the age of chivalry." I'll tell you what, Doug. I mean, I think we've lost something here. The captain of the Costa Concordia abandoned ship, as you well know, and he's, I think, under some kind of court-martial right now. But there's almost no character left. I mean, you know, there's no character left to speak of. And these emergency situations seem to reveal the true character of what Western man has become.
Well, this is absolutely correct. Kevin, it was 10 years ago that I started a magazine called The Law of the Sea. The Law of the Sea was a document that we sent out which addressed the question that while it was not encoded into civil law, the term Law of the Sea referred to the doctrine of women and children first. This idea goes all the way back in time, way back, I would argue, into the scriptures to Old Testament time. It's a doctrine that was proclaimed in the 7th century by the student of Columba, the great teacher of the Word of God from the island of Iona, when a dumna made as a matter of Western law what's called the Law of the Innocents, which said you had to put women and children first. This is a message that was proclaimed in the year 1850 on the HM troop ship Birkenhead, as virtually every man on that boat was eaten alive by sharks or drowned as the boat went down, but more than 300 women and children were saved, and the expression "women and children first" was declared. And it certainly is an expression that was given on the Titanic. But, Kevin, here's something that some of our listeners may not know. What happened on the Costa Concordia is not anomalous in history. There are other examples of it. I'm going to come to, and there's a link as to why those examples have been out there. In the year 1898, a boat by the name of La Burgoyne sunk, and the sailors beat the women over the head with oars. And when it, and the women died and the sailors lived. And when this happened in 1898, there was a row all over Christian civilization, and the answer that was universally given was that France had abandoned Christianity, yeah, had embraced evolutionism, and the consequences was it's the struggle for the survival of the fittest. And therefore, on April 14th and 15th, 1912, when Titanic sank, people drew analogies to evolutionary, statist, struggle of survival of the fittest, anti-Christian philosophy versus the 2,000 years of Christendom that had predominated in our civilization. And what you see on the coast of Concordia, it's almost like a message from God.
Yeah.
Here it is, the anniversary of the,
yeah,
Titanic,
yeah,
and it happened.
Yeah.
It could not be more clear.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's interesting as you say that, Doug. I'm reading some of these UK stories and find that the UK wants to believe part of the problem is the ship was Italian. You know, in other words, I think the UK folks want to hold to the idea that maybe if it was a UK ship, it wouldn't be as bad. You know, there's still some folks hoping that there's something of a Christian character left in at least some of the nations in the Western world. I'm afraid that's not the case, though. I'm afraid this, if this was a United States cruise ship, it would have been effectively the same story. What's your take on that?
Let's get down to brass tacks. First of all, a reference point. In 1996, when Jim Cameron came out with his film Titanic, the New York Times ran an article in which they had interviewed public school students in New York, and they asked the boys in New York if they would give up their seats on a lifeboat for the girls. And the answer, almost universally given by the boys, was, "Are you kidding me? Of course we wouldn't do that. You know, that's not our responsibility. We have taught our sons and daughters that they are simply molecules in motion that have evolved from apes, yeah, who are in a struggle for survival of fitness. We have taught them that we can send women to the front lines of combat to be fodder for the enemy. We have taught them that there's no difference between men and women. We've taught them that feminism is a good thing. We've taught them that men no longer are protectors and defenders. Of course men are going to act like barbarians and pigs in this kind of a circumstance, and they're going to do that. Frankly, I shouldn't even say pigs, because that's being unfair to pigs. The truth of the matter is we have adopted a barbarian philosophy, and this is in fact what barbarian cultures did, which is why when Columba converted and Adumna were part of the conversions of the barbarians, the first thing they had to do is teach them women and children first. Christians teach, treat women differently than barbarians, but evolutionists have embraced that mindset.
Doug, I need your comment on this. I'm following the UK Daily Mail story. It came out from January 17th, 2012. Whatever happened to women and children first? I mean, this is four, five, six pages long. But here's how the story ends up. I want your comment on this. This is the author. This is what he says at the end of his story, women and children first, whatever happened to this. And he's really lamenting it. I mean, this guy's all torn up about it. This is how he ends the story. As the father of three daughters, I do not, with a single fiber of my being, wish to go back to a time when women could not have the vote or get a university degree. Nor do I, surrounded by extremely strong character and intelligent women in my family and among my friends, feel tempted to regard women as the frail sex. But the fact remains that there is a longing among most men to protect women and children, and chivalry is simply a manifestation of that longing. Okay, that's how he ends the story. There's some tension here.
Okay,
not the tension. This guy doesn't have the right worldview yet.
Listen, I'm so thankful for that quote, because it shows the intellectual schizophrenia of the modern mind. I think that what you have just read is really one of the finest examples of the utter confusion of the modern Christian. I think that's the Christian view today.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think that,
yeah,
most Christians would say, we want our daughters to act like men. We want them to live like men. We really don't want these kind of differences. We want to embrace all of the great political victories of radical feminism, but we still want to hold on to the idea that men should open the door for women and maybe even protect them. And the fact of the matter is, it's epistemological nonsense. They do not understand at all that they have embraced the foundations of the very philosophy that rejects women and children. And so it's more of sort of this nostalgic, cute, quaint idea that men should be kind to women. For us, there's nothing nostalgic about it. It's absolute life and death. It's a mandate from God. It's critically important, and it stems from our understanding that greater love had this, that we lay down our life for others, and ultimately that the groom sacrifices for the bride.
Well, I'm trying to think of some biblical backing for what we're saying. I think it's pretty easy to go to some of the simple texts. In fact, the Bible does refer to the woman as being the frail sex. This guy doesn't want to refer to the women as this, but that's what the Bible says. And it says we should live in our wives in an understanding manner because they are the weaker vessel. I mean, you know, that seems to be pretty clear, doesn't it?
Well, there's many things that are clear in the Scripture. Number one, it's a shame for a woman to put on the clothing or the military garments of men. Why? Because men were the protectors. It was for men alone to go into battle. It was for men alone, according to the Word of God, to be leaders in combat. And that's why women were not even allowed to. It was shameful. It was punishable for them to put on military garment like men. They were prohibited from doing that. The whole concept that men are protectors is emblazoned right into the law of God and the Scriptures and the command regarding military warfare, and is a principle from the whole principle that brings us all the way up to the book of Corinthians with respect to why men are to lead, why women, for example, are to be silent in church, not because they do not have anything to say or not intelligent, but man was made first. Man is the protector. Man is the overseer. And man is to do that in a loving, tender, benevolent manner, not in a usurpacious, controlling, or offensive manner. And that's the heart of it. Here's something I think. People do not like the biblical doctrine of headship. They hate it. And they hate it because fundamentally they've embraced the same concept that the serpent embraced in the garden, which is how God said. But what they try to do to it is to malign it and pervert it, when in reality the biblical doctrine of headship and the protection of men over women is one of benevolence, self-sacrifice, kindness, and honor. And that's what the men on board the Titanic represented. Whether or not they were born-again Christians, whether they fully understood everything they were doing, they were part of Christendom, a civilization that embraced these notions as being at the very bedrock of society.
You know, as I read these stories about these men on the Concordia, these large men, these sailors shoving aside pregnant women to get on the life rafts, I couldn't help but think of Exodus 22. Let me read these verses to you, Doug, because I think this ties in God's sense of compassion and interest in the weaker vessel and God's passion in this. Listen to the passion of this verse. I review this on a regular basis in my mind because it comes out in the law in Exodus 22. It says, "You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way, they cry out all to me. I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath will become hot. I will kill you with a sword. Your wives shall be widows, your children fatherless." God has a tender heart towards the fatherless, the widow, the helpless, the one who needs a little extra assistance, a little extra help, and he expects this of us too.
This is, again, the heart and soul of Christendom in a real sense.
Yeah.
Christianity and Christendom, whether it was when men like Ethelbert and others in the 9th and 10th century began to literally encode the book of Exodus and the Pentateuch into the common law, whether it was the chivalric concepts, which were not perfect, which did not perfectly reflect the Bible, but in large respects certainly got the heart and soul of the idea that men were to be defenders and protectors. This has always been the bedrock. It's always been the foundation of our society. It is one of the core principles that separates us from tribalism. It's one of the core principles that separates us from the non-Christian communities. It separates us from Hinduism, where women throw themselves on the funeral pyres. It separates us from all sorts of different philosophies, barbarianism, as I've mentioned, where women are literally thrown into the front lines of battle and used as cannon fodder, or spear fodder in that case. And so when we lose this, we lose much.
Doug, as I read the diaries of Lewis and Clark, it's been a little while, but you know, one of the things that really struck out to me, and it strikes out to me all the time when I read the missionaries and the explorers that come upon these pagan tribes, the women do all the work. I mean, that's the kind of, the men sit around smoking peyote, engaging in tribal warfare, trading wives, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes they even sell their wives to the explorers. But they don't do anything. In fact, one tribe, the men didn't even row the boats. It was the women rowing the boats. The men were good for nothing, for all intents and purposes. This is sort of what's happening now with the majority of the workforce, now women. And you have women, you know, taking most of the jobs now. Twice as many 23-year-old gals are graduating with college degrees as young men. So the direction we're headed is pretty much exactly what Lewis and Clark found as they came upon these pagan tribes.
It's exactly true. Kevin, I was in a debate, an informal debate, with a leader of a Native American Indian group up near Plymouth, Massachusetts, who was very antagonistic to Christianity. He viewed Christianity as something that was very bad. And I was asking him about his life, and he said, we have the women do all the work in the field. We don't do those things. We would never do those things. It's interesting to me that in the Bible, both the directive and the curse fell upon Adam in his work in the field. And the woman's judgment was in bringing forth children. That's where her travail would be, both identifying the locus of their work, their primary endeavors. So we have turned society upside down. We've changed the roles, and men no longer, you know what, we don't even think of women the same way. In a society which has become pornographized, and men view women as objects of lust as opposed to as objects of care, benevolence, protection, and nobility, we are going to consume ourselves. And it's not surprising that when we lose the proper view of women, we lose the proper view of children, and we've turned into a society that consumes its own young. We are literally experiencing the judgments of Deuteronomy 28, where our people are consuming their own children.
This is so fundamental, but so many Christians lose this thing. I think you referred to that earlier in the interview, Doug. Christians, I think, have given way to feminism. You've got this gender neutrality in the treatment of sons and daughters, brothers and sisters. I mean, look, apply this to your average dad. How should he treat his daughters? Apply this to the average brother out. How should he treat his sisters? There are immediate applications to this Titanic story.
Of course there are. And it comes down to the way a father looks at his wife and daughters, the way he cares for them, what he is willing to expose them to, what he is not willing to expose them to, the nobility that he sees in them.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, the options are not, on the one hand, to be a raving, feminist, independent career woman, or on the other hand, to be a mousy, wallflower, stay-at-home, bonbon, eating nothing. Those are not the options. The correct option is a vibrant, strength-filled, noble, productive woman of God who is a member of a household as a daughter or as a wife and who is enthroned with nobility because of the discretion she has and because of her labor and her ethics, such that her husband, or in the case of a daughter, doth safely trust in her. This is a very different woman. Feminists don't like the biblical woman because the biblical woman is hard to turn into a caricature. So they have to create the world's wrong vision of what we think women are like, because that's easy to caricature, because our women, the women that we are encouraging, we are trying to raise by God's grace and only through his victory and power, such women are downright inspiring. They're intelligent, they're hardworking, they're noble, and they love being women, and they're not afraid to be women. They do not desire to be men.
Doug, you want to remember this event that happened 100 years ago, the sinking of the Titanic on April 13th and 14th in Branson, Missouri. Why? Why does Doug Phillips want to commemorate these things? Why is it important for us to do this?
The future of our civilization will depend in part on the stories we tell to our children and the way those stories motivate and inspire them to behave themselves. It's our duty to preserve, to archive the best stories and to explain their context in light of biblical Christianity. The story of the Titanic, Kevin, is unique. This is the second most famous ship in all of history, next to Noah's Ark. For some reason, the facts surrounding the story of the Titanic have absolutely captivated millions of children over the last 100 years. Millions. It's unlike almost any other story that's out there. In a real sense, it's a modern-day Bible epic. It seems that way. People thought it was unsinkable. God brought judgment to it, and yet there was nobility in the midst of the judgment and sacrifice. And hundreds of micro-stories, all of which either show the blessing of God or show judgment or show different elements of this panoramic epic tale that illustrates the principle that God is 100% sovereign. Men must be men and women must be women. So it's very powerful. And if we don't tell these stories to our children, we lose something. So right now, Kevin, we have this opportunity.
Yes.
And the opportunity is to make it clear and to inspire to our children. So here's what we're doing.
Good.
We're holding an event in Branson, Missouri. It's called the Titanic 100, an international centennial event, because we have people representing other countries that will be there part of it. Kevin, it's going to be tremendous fun. We're having hundreds of people come, and you can come this way. You don't have to, but I think it's a lot of fun. If you want to come in vintage 1912 clothing, or you can come in modern clothing and interact with those who are wearing their vintage clothing. We have historical reenactors. We're going to be taking people through an incredible tour of probably the greatest Titanic museum in the entire world. They'll be going out on a May for the 100th anniversary, celebrating and remembering with music, ballads, plays, storytelling, an epic event. Actually, we're going to be renting a old paddle steamship, which seats 720 people, where we're going to have these performances and music and whatnot.
Wow.
On the actual anniversary, and we're hoping, of course, that it won't sink. We're thinking the very best of that. And we are going to be at the Lawrence Welk Theater, as well as the Lawrence Welk Resort, which is a beautiful and very affordable place for people to go. You can get a room for $75 a night. It's fantastic.
Right.
And basically, for these 2 days, you are going to go back in time.
Yeah.
And you're going to be surrounded by people that went back in time, all from a distinctively Christian perspective.
Yes.
So, Kevin, here's my thought. We can spend months trying to get details in our homeschooling to our children. But in 2 days, you can go and literally be immersed in an epic from 100 years ago filled with Christian stories, stories of technology, many different stories that are part of the Titanic era, but all pointing to the doctrine of Christ and women and children first. And you can have that incredible experience. So we really want people to come on out and join us, and they can learn more about it by going to visionformministries.org. where they can sign up and come down for this great family event in beautiful Branson, Missouri.
You know, Doug, it's so important to tell the true story of what really happened. Here's Mark Stein, who's a conservative talk show host, talking about the movie Titanic. He says this: when James Cameron made his movie, he was interested in everything except what the story was actually about. That's
well
pretty good,
said.
Huh?
That's exactly right, because the story... Here's what Jim Cameron did. He introduced class warfare in Marxism, where it did not exist.
Uh-huh.
There's no historical evidence of that.
Uh-huh.
He misrepresented some of the stories. For example, he shows First Officer Murdoch committing suicide. There's no real record of that, and after the film was over, he had to apologize for doing that. And he leaves you very unsatisfied, because the story ends up being a romance story, which is an immoral story between these two passengers, one from upper class and one from lower class. And I think a far better film is the Walter Lord classic from the 1950s called A Night to Remember, which we will be showing at the Lawrence Welk Auditorium on the big screen, and it does a beautiful job of showing the heroism of the men, the nobility of the moment. It's a powerful, powerful film, A Night to Remember.
This is an amazing event. Doug, I'm surprised you pulled all these things together, but it's worthwhile. I mean, this is the 100th year anniversary. It's the only time that anybody in the United States is going to have an opportunity to remember this absolutely important event in the history of this country, and hopefully we'll walk away learning some things from it, and it'll change the way that we interact with our own families.
I think so, and I think we leave this event. Those who come are going to leave this event with a mandate, and the mandate is, hey, boys, we're going to teach you a whole ethic of how to live your life. Here's how you think about women. Here's how you treat women. Here's how you behave with them. Girls, here's how you respond to nobility in men. And here's how you demonstrate nobility yourself.
Yeah.
And here's what we think about the sovereignty of God. And I think the children are going to walk away from that, and they're going to be transform. I mean, I hope they will be, but I certainly think it will be an event to remember.
Doug, I can't believe how many times I get back to the analogy of the Titanic. I use it all the time in many of my talks and much of my thinking, because I can't help but think that we haven't learned the lesson yet. I think a lot of people still believe our entire economic system is an unsinkable ship, that science and technology will save us. Modern man is still just about as proud as he was when he built the Titanic. And I think there's some things we can learn from that, or even till now, as we move forward.
You're spot on right. In fact, Kevin, that would probably be a good issue for you to address when you come to speak, which is avoiding quote, unsinkable ships, unquote.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we're surrounded by unsinkable ships, and they're all illusory. There are no unsinkable ships. And I don't know that God could have given us a clearer example than that of the Titanic. Here was a boat, 883 in length, that was believed to be unsinkable. The shipbuilder said even God himself allegedly could not sink the ship. And, of course, all it took was the right hit with the right problems leading up to it to open up a gap in the side of the boat and send it to the bottom of the Atlantic. Just under 1,400 people died that night in the Titanic, and it's a lesson to us, but we still don't remember.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, no unsinkable ship when it comes to what man can do, but, of course, we have our unsinkable ship in Jesus Christ, and that's probably the most important lesson in history any of us could ever learn. The big event is coming up April 13th and 14th in Branson, Missouri. For more information, that's visionformministries.org or visionforum.com. Either way, we'll get you there. Doug, thanks so much for joining us on Generations. We look forward to Branson, Missouri, April 13th and 14th.
Thank you so much, Kevin, and God bless you and the whole team out there at Generations.
And ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. You can interact with this program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation. Hey, church leaders, are the parents in your church doing the basics in the home? I'm not talking about changing their children's diapers and feeding them three square meals a day. I'm talking about the basics, the Word of God. I'm talking about the book of Proverbs. If this is God's curriculum for kids, if this is God's book for providing knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to a young man or a young woman, then the parents in your churches need to be inculcating these lessons into their children. That's why I produced a 3-volume family Bible study series on the book of Proverbs, specifically for parents, who, by the way, are the God-appointed teachers according to the book of Proverbs. All right, pastors, elders, leaders, I'd like to encourage you to take this challenge. Instead of purchasing Sunday school materials this year, as most churches do, why not distribute our family Bible study guides on Proverbs to every family in your church? We'll be happy to provide you with bulk prices at generationswithvision.com. Churches all over America are providing family Bible study guides to their families as a means of encouraging families to this vitally important responsibility. Contact us through generationswithvision.com for bulk prices, or order your copy today at generationswithvision.com.